In 2017, after being let go from the Fight Network, which owned the very popular live audio wrestling, the also very popular John Pollock and Wei Ting could have gone in a more safe direction when it came to the next steps in their careers. But they wanted to do something different, and thus a new wrestling media outlet was created, Post Wrestling. And just days after its initial launch in 2017, John and I talked about the project on this very podcast. 5 years later, and days before he, Wei, and the many fans of Post Wrestling will celebrate their anniversary with a live show during Full Gear Weekend in Newark, John rejoined the podcast to talk about the lessons they learned, where he hopes the company will be in another 5 years, and much more. So grab a double-double, or a one milk, one sugar, or an iced cappuccino, or whatever you like from Tim Hortons, and listen to John Pollock from Post Wrestling on today's Josh Nason's Punch-Out. A lot happens in a couple months, and a lot certainly has happened in 5 years. And joining me this week to talk about every single thing that's happened in the world for the last 5 years, Post Wrestling's John Pollock. John, it is great to see your face again. You know, I see your face all the time on the YouTubes and social media and all that stuff. But it's good to us to chat face-to-face. Welcome back. Four times. This is your fourth time being on the show. I didn't tell you that before.
The Four Timers Club. I look forward to getting my official Josh Nason punch-out jacket, maybe a blazer of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that Dave has made the full pivot, when will Josh Nason and Josh Nason's punch-out make the move to video at this point? You are now the holdout, are you not?
I am one of them. Yeah. I was asked about that the other day if that was interest. There's a little bit of an intimidation factor, and I don't know why, because I'm very handsome, so I'm not worried about that part. I think my wife may feel threatened by all the fans that will, you know, maybe perhaps be outside my home here after they see me on video. But I think it's just the technology.
Concerns that every wrestling podcaster has is just
it's very
unleashing
true.
those images out to the world. Yes, you know, I understand.
I was walking the streets of Boston last night for AEW Dynamite, and people just coming up to me, asking me into all types of questions and things like that. And I did not pay for security last night, so it was a little bit more difficult than usual. I mean, you know this, right? Being in Toronto, you know this.
It's I had to make that decision in life. Like, do I want to pursue this, or do I want to be able to go out in public without being mobbed? Because mm-hmm. that's what it's like up here in Toronto, Josh. So
yeah.
You would be stunned at just the street stop when John Pollock walks out to go get a coffee.
Yeah, you must get recognized in public though, right? Or do you?
It happens at times. Usually at like odd times where I might be like out with my friends, like, and believe me, I'm not painting a picture like this is a regular occurrence or something. Funny enough is that there have been several where it is somebody that I recognize your voice and may not even know what I look like, but it's the voice that they put two and two together that it might be me or something like that.
Interesting. Yeah. And so to answer your question, I think I'm going to try it. I think with doing like Zooms and stuff and kind of getting used to the cadence and thing like that. Because my big thing is I want people to still answer questions as if though, like, they don't have to perform on camera. You know what I mean?
I get that.
I don't talk with like a ton of wrestlers. I usually just pick select ones. I have specific kind of things I want to ask. And for the most part, they've been good. Like J.E. Drake, we did a Zoom. And he was engaging, and that would have worked fine. So I think at some point early next year, as soon as I get the hang of like StreamYard and stuff, I think that might happen. So we'll see.
What goes into your guest selections? Because I always find you pick some of the more interesting names that maybe don't always do a whole lot of interviews, which is always kind of my mindset as well.
Yeah.
Rather than doing just the wrestler X that might do the whole media rounds and stuff. I'm very picky now when it comes to who I reach out to. But who do you pick other than an obvious slam dunk like a John Pollock?
Yeah, exactly. I think you kind of hit it that. I like to go for people that you don't see everywhere all the time. And I think the timing is can be serendipitous too. Like, the Ariel Helwani interview that I had a couple weeks ago on just days after he ripped Tony Khan, that was completely luck that we happened to talk that day. Cause we had been for a month trying to make that happen. And it just happened to happen that Thursday where we're recording and Shit Hit the Fan days earlier. So that was pretty awesome. You know, with wrestlers, it's ones that a lot of times I've seen and I see something with that just kind of sticks with me. And I think there might be something here. Carmelo Hayes, which I talked to him when he was known as Christian Casanova in the indies. Mm-hmm. He was wrestling for this local indie that I go to all the time, Limitless. And you could see the crowd, Nishi, who's a heel, and the crowd just kind of just started taking to him. And he really wasn't doing anything different, but he just had a way about him. And I'm like, I'm really interested because I think there's something here. I don't know if it's going to be WWE, but you know, it could be something of note. And so then there's that one. JD, I've wanted to talk to forever because I find his story fascinating. He reveals himself in that podcast that I had never heard him talk about, like with his son coming out as pansexual and dealing with that and growing up in the South and kind of dealing with some of those biases and so on. I was interested in some of the indie stuff because I know he had to, you know, he had to pull off a date because of Ring of Honor basically called him last second. He had to pull off a Limitless date. And I was kind of wondering, like, what is that like for an indie wrestler to have to do that? Because I think we see these things happen all the time and we assume, it just happens, whatever. But for a lot of talents, it's like they're basically telling an employer and a future employer, sorry, I can't make this. You're on your own. And kind of like that kind of potentially could screw them down the road. So I wanted to ask questions about that. In terms of media guests, it's really just, I find like things that are in the periphery that we take for granted. And I'm interested in like, I want to know more about that. Like Mike Weber, you've had Mike Weber on your show before.
Yeah.
And
really interesting guy. Like
he
that.
Is.
I mean, when you go into his history, like there is so much there that I would love to explore more with him. He seems to somewhat be, you know, resistant to talk too much, but you know, has always been really accommodating when I've reached out and stuff, and I'm sure you experienced the same.
Yeah, we talked about his you look at his LinkedIn, WWE, WCW, and TNA. He worked for extended runs for all of those, so we talked a little about that. But it was basically, you know, based on the GCW stuff. Like I look at, there was everyone wanted to kind of focus on the Brett Lauderdale aspect, but I'm like, okay, there's this other thing over here, which is interesting, which is Fight is really trying to put some emphasis on Fight Plus. There was a lot of assumptions like, you know, why would GCW do all this and all this? So I'm like, well, why don't I just ask the digital partner that's really kind of making the investment here? So that was a good conversation we had for about, you know, 40 minutes about all types of stuff. Things that we kind of take for granted, I think, but are very important, kind of the wrestling and MMA ecosystem. I like to kind of look at those stories and unearth those, and also bring kind of new names and new faces to light, people that I read or see other people talking about. One of those people, post-wrestling, is Andrew Thompson. I talked to him last year for the Year in Review series. So I've seen him do a ton of stuff, but he's never been on these airways before in any Wrestling Observer airways. So I'm like, great, let's talk to him. Let's talk to this person. So that's kind of my process. It's like I don't like doing the – I don't really do the recap shows because our website has a ton of them. You guys, there's so many recap shows of the week to week stuff, which is good for some websites. For me, I'm like, I could do that, but like, why don't I try something else that is going to get a little bit more more interest and all that.
Yeah, I think that's always something that I think you have kind of, you know, for any site, you have sort of your go-to shows where I think like, you know, it requires that level of coverage, but it's certainly going to be the personalities that differentiate it because you've never had so many choices of where you can go if it's just strictly to get some analysis. Like it's like anything, like like in your area, Josh, like when it comes to like sports talk radio, it's, you probably have many different options and it's going to be the personality that it's not so much what happened last night, but I want to hear X and their reaction to what happened last night. Or if it's a business deal, I want to get this person's thoughts. And I think it's tougher and tougher now to sort of find your own unique lane that is going to distinguish you from the pack. There's so much out there. It's never been easier to start something and get involved, but to gain a following, it takes a lot. Like you really have to, like, you know, we've been doing this a long, long time, and it's only after like years and years that you start to, okay, these people are sticking around, and you hope that you pick up some people along the way that like to hear, you know, your thoughts on things.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I want to talk to you, obviously, is the 5th anniversary of Post Wrestling coming up during Full Gear Weekend. If people are around, you're having a 5th anniversary show at, is it QXT Nightclub? Did I get that right?
Correct. Yes. QXT's Nightclub in Newark.
And it is minutes, literally walking distance, minutes away from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. So that'll be fun. It's on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Tickets still available. You can go to postwrestling.com for that information. And also there's links on your Twitter page and all that as well. And 5 years ago, just under 5 years ago, we talked on 5 days after you launched in late December 2017. I listened to that interview today, and it's interesting because like so much has changed in the 5 years since then, not only with the wrestling landscape, but like, I mean, we went through a pandemic, right? I mean,
that happened.
Yeah, all this stuff, the way that content continues to change with how people take in information, all that stuff, more wrestling being added. I mean, AEW was created during that time. Vince McMahon is no longer with WWE, still alive, but no longer with WWE, which is crazy, right? In the MMA landscape, it's UFC is still the dominant player. It is as big as ever, but I think with less stars than ever. And to me, but I mean, so much has changed. And 5 years later, I mean, here you guys are, right? You're celebrating your fifth anniversary. There was this was a story that was born out of Live Audio Wrestling, or a Fight Network rather, releasing you and Wei. And you said, basically you started that night. You're like, let's do this. And 5 years later with, you know, 1600 subscriber Patreon subscribers and so on and all that, here you are, you're still around and still doing pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't think Wei or I are the reflective type, but you know, just, you know, promoting this show, and you know, we've been hearing like a lot of feedback from people, and you know, you attach an anniversary to anything, it kind of gives people like a chance to look at what you've created. And so much is just the day to day, and what are we doing next, what is the next big thing that you focus on. And I mean, I think we can look at this as 5 years, like starting this where it was the two of us. Like, we did not have any investment behind us. It was strictly like we were starting, the two of us, way learning, you know, how to design a website. We had basically no idea about this this outlet called Patreon that was essentially going to be our lifeblood to be able to do this full time, and getting into it at a time before it was all that known. Like, there were a handful of wrestling ventures on there. The most prominent that I knew at that time was OSW Review, which is, you know, a very popular outlet. Yeah. And, you know, we relied on those guys who helped us a lot just with advice along the way. And that was sort of our thinking was, okay, let's go into this and just attack it for 8 months, and we'll go to the summer of 2018. And then we'll assess, like, we either have a product that people want and are willing to support with their dollars or not. And maybe we don't have a place in this system that requires full-time work. Like, the audience will dictate that. And we were very thankful that we had the kind of response after we launched, because there were many questions going into this. Like, the law, it was a free show that you could listen to. All of our podcasts were free. We had never asked for any kind of money from our audience. And that was why we didn't want to exclude that side either. Like, we wanted to have a free component, but also to run this business, like, we did have to have a monetary component through Patreon. So, like, we didn't know what the site would be, what it would become, its identity. I'm very happy that I think it's very distinct from what we were doing before. I think it's kind of crafted its own unique place. And again, there's so many outlets out there. You just hopefully can find enough of a following for your version of presenting news, of doing reviews, and a site that people hopefully enjoy, at least enough numbers do.
Yeah. So yeah. So we talked, it was December 29th, 2017.
Right after.
Yeah, 5 days after. You had 800 people at that point that were funding. And obviously now you're over, well, over 1,600, which is great. At that point, I completely forgot I did this. I reviewed the top Toronto employers that you could have potentially gone to instead of launching your own thing, which include Onyx Corp, Hudson Bay, and Canadian Tire. And you did quite a good promo on the benefits of Canadian Tire and kind of they're much more than tires. And you went into a whole thing about that. So that was pretty good. Well, I listened to that today. Yeah.
Well, Canadian Tire has made it through the pandemic. They are still around. They are still manufacturing many beyond just the tire industry. So yeah. Good for Canadian Tire. Glad to hear that they have made it through these 5 years. As well.
That's right. Just along with you guys.
Cannot speak about Onyx Corp. I don't know the latest on Onyx Corp.
Okay.
But that's, well, we can do some research after.
Well, I'll do a deep dive, some sort of project on that. So yeah, I'm kind of going through some of the notes. Do you remember? So you were talking about the day that you got laid off from Fight Network. You were just about to start in the morning on a big, what you call the big audio project that you're glad you did not start that day right. Because you didn't want to work on that and just have it scrapped. Do you remember what it was? Was it one of your like narrative style podcasts or anything like that?
Yes. I was going to do, yeah, I'm just jogging my memory right now. So it was the week of UFC 217 with George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping. So it was St. Pierre's return after, you know, wow. He hadn't fought since the Johnny Hendricks fight, which right. was 4 years before that. So that's right. I was going to do it was related to George St. Pierre. I can't remember what the exact thought process was in my head, but that's what I was sitting down to start on Monday, probably to have ready for Thursday. That was when I would put out my MMA report show. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was starting off that Monday. So, yeah, I definitely would have been in a way worse mood if I'd spent the whole day starting on that. And by the end of the day, that's when they deliver the news. So I did appreciate getting the Monday morning heads up.
Good. Yeah. Those
an underrated day to get laid off is Monday morning. That's probably the perfect time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The narrative, those narrative projects, that's the best way I can think to try to put it. You really kind of got known for some of those that you put out. You did, of course, now I'm completely blanking on, what was the one you did? You did one on Owen Hart, if I remember right. You did one on, it was something like the amount of days. It's one of those things that I really enjoyed.
It was what or the first one I did was. It was right after UFC 199, and it was more so I had no plan to do this. It's just it evolved into this because it was just. It felt like one of those 30 for 30s. The one where it's June 17th, 1994.
That's it. Yes.
And it was just the backdrop is the OJ chase. But then the way 30 for 30 did it was just all these different things going on at the same time. And coming out of that weekend, you had the passing of Kimbo Slice, the passing of Muhammad Ali, UFC 199, which as much as it was like Michael Bisping winning this big championship, it was like from a media perspective, it was the Ariel Helwani story coming out of that. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my thread of tying all these things of how the media is the thread for all these stories. And here was a story about the biggest MMA promotion kind of blacklisting the most prominent media member for a several day period. And it was a very arduous process. I put that together in about 2 or 3 days and was just fried by the end of it. But that was the first one I did where it was just sort of like a timeline of all these different events and how they intersected and kind of trying to tie it up at the end. So that was my first stab at it.
Yeah. And then you did the Owen Hart one, correct?
Yes. The Owen Hart one was a few years ago for it would have been the 20th anniversary of his passing. So, that was one. It was a several week process where I was just very lucky that I got again, kind of to your thinking was like speaking to people that you wouldn't necessarily have heard from in all of this. And I just got lucky with some of the people I found, including a fan that was just with Owen that final day that was just driving him around in Kansas City and was supposed to take him to St. Louis the next day for Raw. Yep. And just a name that Martha Hart had casually noted in her book. And I was like, I would really be intrigued to hear this guy. Like it was just, this guy was with Owen the last day. I've never heard of this guy. And I ended up reaching out to him and eventually heard back from him. And that became like a really interesting interview.
Yeah, those I think there's a market for those. There's certain stories I've kind of jotted down like, oh, I think this would be good. Or this would be good in both UFC and MMA because there's so many. I think it's so hard now because we're so focused on like every week there's more wrestling and MMA content. Right. I mean, WWE alone, there's just between Raw and SmackDown, 5 hours. You include a pay-per-view, that's another 4. If you watch everything else, and NXT, that's another 2. If there's a NXT special, there's another 2. AEW, there's 4. They have a pay-per-view. There's so much stuff that I think in our society, we lose so much perspective on where we just came from. We never get to look back. You know, I think, you know, 30 for 30s and everything, and some of these other narrative things look at back at specific stories. But sometimes they're so far back and they appeal to some of us that remember how big those were. And it's hard now because, like, we don't have those unifying those stories, because I don't think we take enough time to spend them. I think the all-out press conference, I think that's going to be potentially – it could be its own thing. But I think there's so many interesting stories that may have not been, like, the biggest stories of all time. But they're ones that if you focused a couple episodes on something and did the work, I think there's a market for that. I don't know how, but it's kind of floating around in my head. But you've done them so well, you know?
Yeah, well, in a perfect world, like, I would love to, you know, kind of relax a lot of the day-to-day stuff and do like two or three of those a year. Like, they're very time consuming to put together, but you get so caught up in just the day-to-day where it's just trying to find the time to do all of that. And that's sort of where we are, where it's still like a very like small operation that we have in terms of, like, we brought on other people as well. But I agree with you. I think that many times there is that instant reaction, but then we're on to the next story. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just kind of shelve a story and you just tie it with a bow of a quick one sentence encapsulation of what that story was. And there's so much more to it, like talking to the people with the benefit of perspective rather than, like, I would be way more interested in talking to a CM Punk 2 years from now than I would in the moment right now, where all of this is fresh. Yep. It's all like, it's still in flux. I'm sure he has many conflicting reactions to how that all went down. And is probably still in the process of how is this whole thing going to end. So I think sometimes you want to have that distance from a story. Tying it back to the Owen Hart thing is, you know, one of the people I interviewed there was Jimmy Corderas, who was there in the ring when Owen fell. And that was one where, you know, I think, you know, 20 years removed, he's talked about it since, he wrote about it in his book. But I think having that perspective all those years later, it just gives you a different kind of insight where you're a bit removed from the story and can also assess it almost from like a third party perspective rather than being so tied to it emotionally. And I think that goes for many stories of a certain level of importance.
Yeah. I'll get back to post. Some question I had. So over the last 5 years, you know, some of the things we talked about, you had talked about when launching post is listening to the people kind of for what they want, because you and Wei had done a show, but you were taking it. It was this battle of battle may not be the right word, but this conflict of like, what do we do free versus paid? Because you're asking people have so listened to free and then they're coming to paid. And I think we've, you know, kind of gone over that. But also, what type of things have you learned over the past 5 years? What things going into this you think, okay, I think this is going to be this way, and what things you're like, wow, we were completely off on this? Or what other things have you learned to kind of about yourselves and about the doing a venture like this over the last half decade?
I think I definitely learned the fact that there's certainly an audience that just enjoys there's quite a lot of people that it just seems to have I went into this and it just seemed to be like, let's just flood things, like, you know, have everything covered. And I think there's a lot of people that are like, we're cool with you guys, like, dialing back on stuff so that you guys have, like, you know, reasonable personal lives on top of this, that there are, because I looked at it that, okay, there's this monthly fee on Patreon and it's just give people as much value as possible. And I think that, like, there's a healthy percentage of people that are just, they look at that as almost like, it's cool that we get this bonus stuff, but we want this site to continue as is. And if it's $6 a month and that's going towards this, like, that's the value that we're getting out of it, is like, this site exists, this outlet exists. Yes, there's bonus content, there's free content, but my pledge is going towards this site continuing. So those are the kinds of like feedback that you get from a lot of people. I'm extremely critical of a lot of my own work. I'm constantly looking at how we can improve. And I think part of it along the way is, I think you have to sometimes acknowledge when you've done well on top of it. I've been very bad with that, I think, for a lot of things.
It's hard. It's hard.
It's hard, but I think you have to kind of almost push yourself to Acknowledge when you've done well, because if you only dwell on, I screwed up here, this could have been better here, like, you can always get into that trap. So I think it's trying to have more of that, that balance. And it's always kind of a push and pull with that for me.
What do you think you guys have done well?
I will say that I think in the 5 years, the audience and community that we have developed, I'm extremely happy with. The fact that we have branched out and done, and this is more so on Way than me, a lot of like non-wrestling shows like Way and two other individuals, Jordan Goodman and Neil Flanagan, they launched this show. It's called The Wellness Policy. Yes. And it's like loosely tied to professional wrestling, but it's really not. Like, they take on topics that are just, you know, mental health and, you know, parenting and just all these different things. And hearing the callers that will call in and some of the stories that they share, it's like, this is incredible that these people would be feel comfortable enough to share, like, very vulnerable stories. I think that overall, I don't think men talk about their mental health nearly enough in our society. It's improved, but I still feel there's that barrier. And let's let the cat out of the bag. It's a predominantly male audience that we're going to be speaking to.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that, I think that's what I've been most happy with, is just the community that we get. It's, you know, you're going to get your negative feedback. I think that's inherently going to be part of the process. But I think we've been pretty good at being able to navigate too much of like the toxic nature of that, of what professional wrestling discourse can delve into at times. And part of that is Way. And I don't think me and Way are, you know, as public figures as others either. Like, we kind of are on our island and we're cool. Like, we kind of understand like where we are in the whole ecosystem of like wrestling media as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you knew Way forever before this. What changes have you seen in him in the 5 years since launching this?
With Way?
Yeah.
Way, I would say, has, you know, he, working at the Fight Network with him, like, obviously, we work very closely. And, you know, for those that maybe are not aware, like, Way, like, I got him into doing, like, all this podcast stuff with me. But, I mean, he was, like, the top editor and, like, a producer at the Fight Network. Like, he was, like, the go-to person in that department. So, watching him now, you know, almost from the get-go, it felt like this was something he had in him, as did I. But I think he attacked this very aggressively when he started. And just to see the changes in him in terms of a leader and somebody that has a lot of ambitious ideas, he works incredibly hard. Like, I've just seen a whole different aspect of Way come out in this, where it's our name on this. So we both take that extremely seriously, and we have those similarities. Like, the two of us are pretty simpatico when it comes to, you know, how we want to present things and knowing how the other is going to think about things and growing the site. But I mean, he's just, to me, really just stepped forward in terms of like seeing that. In our prior career, it was like we were working for somebody else. Like, it was, you know, we were attached to it, but this is our thing. And I think that has been certainly a change for both of us, but very noticeable in a way.
All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop, you want to watch a soccer game, you want to watch a baseball game, you want to watch this, you want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020, and we are now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free, completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W. Huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. How did you manage the pandemic? Because you guys did, you were kind of separated out for a while, kind of doing the thing. It's almost like you ask people that are primarily video, like how they survived this thing. I'm just kind of thinking through it. It was easy in some respects, I would assume, because the technology is there where you don't have to be in the same room all the time. You kind of lose that dynamic at times. I mean, we're doing this now. People can do Zooms and all that. But there also, you know, there was this whole question about wrestling. It's such a weird time, I think, in life, but also for wrestling, because wrestling just kept going, of course, right? And of course, there was the questions all about, you know, UFC and MMA and that whole strangeness. But how did you guys kind of manage through the pandemic? And obviously, from a, you know, subscriber standpoint, interest standpoint, guys are still doing great. But did you have any difficulties, or kind of just business as usual after you tweaked a few things or figured some stuff out?
Well, there was definitely concern. Like in March, it was like, we're going into this, and I certainly did not. I was not at the mindset that wrestling wasn't going to skip a beat during this whole thing. Like I was thinking, like, Jesus, we're like, wrestling's gonna have to shut down. Like that just seems like the most logical conclusion to make here. Stupid me. So I mean, we were at the point, like we were having discussions about like what, like we need to come up with. Like I figured, like we can come up with some ideas, but if this is gonna be a year or two, yeah. I mean, like that. It sounds ridiculous now, but in March it was like we could go a year without pro wrestling. Like that's like it was all just a complete unknown. And then it was almost the opposite, where, you know, wrestling just moves forward. Obviously the UFC moved forward, and that becomes to me a major topic. Like here are these industries that are getting paid all of these rights fees, and they have the luxury of not dealing with any players associations, no unions where they have to negotiate. And this became like a health and safety story on top of it, like these performers that are going out there and maintaining these television contracts. And then in the WWE's case, like mass firings during all of this. That's right, I mean, yeah. Like it warranted as much coverage as any time. So, I mean, in terms of moving forward, like we looked at it, like we'll, like our Patreon, it did not take a dip during that period for the pandemic. It was as the pandemic has slowed that we've seen a little decrease, but it was during like the peak of the pandemic, like it largely was stable. And maybe that was just, you know, people were looking for, you know,
normalcy,
other forms of entertainment, and yeah, wanted to stay on board. So we were very lucky in that sense. And then in the summer of 2021, like we got a big spike with all the CM Punk stuff. Like that was a pretty noticeable spike, like that weekend that we saw, where, you know, as much as like you look at like the biggest stories in pro wrestling, when there's a story like that and it's a fans being excited, I think that's where that's where you get like the most amount of intrigue. I think is when there's that excitement level, and I think certainly Punk brought that, and mm-hmm. probably it was like the opposite of that a year later, but a different set of circumstances for his attention.
Yeah, it's always funny when, of course, our website and Dave in particular gets David and Brian get accused of wanting AEW to win and for WWE to do bad. And Brian says before, and I can tell you, it is good for business when everyone's doing good, you know, because if WWE is to the point where no one cares, it goes to that point of like, why do I care to hear people talk about it, right? If it's interesting and there's movement back and forth and storylines and stuff that even is bad that people are talking about and the good stuff people are talking about, that's good for everyone. Because then it's just like, I want to hear them talk about this and this and this. And yeah, it's interesting. It's a really interesting time with all this different stuff. And how do you cover this and this and this? And yeah,
you got to choose. Like you can't cover everything now. Right. And it's the argument of, like, certainly you need to have your coverage of like WWE and AEW. Like that's a given that you need that type of coverage. But then when it comes to the lower end promotions that just seem to be scratching and clawing for attention, it's, you know, you have to go with what is the most newsworthy for your audience that they're most intrigued by, that they're going to care about. And I just see like that next tier, and sort of New Japan's in the middle, but then you look at your other levels of companies, your NWAs and MLWs and Impact, I put in that level, and yeah, all these products, like you can, it's pretty tough to find like bad pro wrestling. Like the quality is very high, but there's only so much time that a fan has in a given week. I don't think they're looking to pile on more hours. Like, if you're a WWE and AEW consumer, you've got to have something that really stands out that's going to grab people, especially if you're asking them to pay for that product.
Yeah, this is I was talking about this with last night with Jesse Collings of Voice of Wrestling and so on. There's no shortage, and this isn't like an original thought, but there's no shortage of great wrestling 7 nights a week that you could see that's new. Not to mention all the stuff that you and I and all these people have never seen because we haven't got a chance to get to it, that lives in the archives of IWTV, Fight Plus, all these different things we've never seen. And it's you're right, with the second level groups, I thought that this year there'd be more of a reckoning with maybe one of them shutting down or saying, you know, we're just not making money. That hasn't happened yet. I think part of that is due to the mass taping era kind of returning, where, you know, they will do a pay-per-view and then film for two straight days, and they really don't care how many fans they get there. They can just kind of figure that out, and they can run TV for the next 2 months or 3 months, you know, kind of the MLW model or something like that. I don't know long-term how really viable that is, but these groups, and it's with so much great wrestling, you have to do something to really stand out. And I think we're going to see, like, creative and storylines and stuff. That's really going to, I think, really kind of lead the day in this next. I mean, that's always been a big important part of wrestling. I think it's going to get more importance, because if I can see great wrestlers in every group, why do I need to spend my time watching you? And if all of a sudden there's a buzzworthy storyline, something different, which is a huge challenge, you might be able to get some attention. But it is, I mean, look at the NWA this week. They had attention due to a real life conflict between a guy who doesn't want to work there and the owner. It's but no one's talking about the card for anything else. And if this thing didn't happen, I don't think anybody would be talking about the show at all. I don't know if it's necessarily going to help it. I don't necessarily think it will, but like, MLW returned last week after a long absence. That's always a risk. Impact just consistently kind of, you know, does their thing and what have you. It's interesting, because it's like, I wonder how much time people have to spend, kind of what you were saying there. And also, how are these groups making money? You know, at what point are they like, this is just not, it's not worth it to keep pursuing the dream, because it is just too hard. Do some start to look at a merger or something? I don't know. It's a fascinating time, because there's so much content out there, but I don't know if anyone's actually making money outside the big two, you know?
Yeah, and I think you're going to get many of those companies that are going to dig their heels in, just with the elusive dream that if one of these streamers just, you know, with all these negotiations coming up, if there is a company that it's like, they don't get WWE, they don't get AEW, are they attracted to the notion of professional wrestling? And here are these alternative options, and they can get some life-changing deal. But it's a pipe dream.
I can't say
there's no chance of it happening, but I think that is what is guiding a lot of these people, is just the idea that if we can just get any type of there's never been more television revenue out there for dedicated to professional wrestling, that it's a game changer if you can land one of those deals. But it's a wide gap between a WWE AEW promised land and all the others that are, you know, trying to go with whatever they can reap.
I think I've thought the same thing. I think for some of these groups, it would have happened by now if that was going to be the case, because everyone is looking for something. And the fact that, you know, Impact is still doing the Access TV thing, who knows if that changed a year from now. But again, how much money would they get in a deal? Who knows? But like, you know, MLW, Court Bauer, who your old friend who you did a podcast with forever, you know, he kept teasing these TV deals and stream deals and all this stuff. And nothing's really changed other than he moving to Pro Wrestling TV, which I assume a lot of people had never heard of before. NWA is on Fight. It's just, I think there is that dream, but I think reality at some point is going to set in, and it's like, you know, we're not making any money or making barely enough. I'm always fascinated by that, how much the dream keeps getting pushed, and keeps getting pursued before it's like, someone's like, yeah, this isn't going to happen. Cause if it hasn't happened in 5-10 years, then why would it happen now? You know?
And for the streamers too, like I was talking about the other day, is that, you know, a year from now, you know, Fight has established itself. Like, it is, like, it's a pretty impressive success story, but this Fight Plus experiment, like, you certainly have to look at it. Like, certainly it looks like the strategy is make it such an affordable price that you are going to bring X amount of people into the tent. And then perhaps you go the strategy we've seen so many other streamers, get them in and then slowly increase the price. Yeah. But how many people are out there? How many people are out there that are, you know, picking and choosing Game Changer Wrestling? And if that number is high enough that this is a success, great. Yeah. Pro Wrestling TV is doing the opposite model of just the ad supported route, which I think that's a tough model to go with. And then you have your IWTVs, you have the High Spots, you know, for a library. Like it's incredible stuff that you can get on these services, but how much can you spread your dollars if you're a wrestling fan? That's an active wrestling fan that's going to shows, that's buying pay-per-views every month. Yeah. And has, you know, three other wrestling streaming services, and this is an add-on to mm-hmm. to your streaming bill. Like that's yeah. like it's you certainly need a full-time job to be a full-time pro wrestling fan.
Certainly do. Certainly do. A couple other questions as we round the bend here. Last question about Post. 5 years from now, where do you hope Post is? Things you might want to accomplish and so on, as if we talk here, me being a little bit more grayer and so on and so forth. What 10 years or 5 years from now, where do you hope to be?
I hope that we can have several like full-time employees working working with the site. Like we've expanded, certainly, that we have a lot of freelancers working for the site. Andrew Thompson is, you know, a constant on the site as well. I want to continue to expand that. I want to continue to flesh out like our whole like Patreon strategy. And you're always looking to grow. We've put a lot of resources into our YouTube presence over the last year. And that's a tough road to go of like growing, of just growing a channel, and that's sort of the some of the things that we're trying the most on, and it's just continued growth. I think that the audio documentaries that you brought up, I think that's one thing that we can kind of separate ourselves with. So I want to be able to work out a schedule where we can have more of a regular release of those, whether it's like two or three a year, something like that. Cause I think those, like, they perform very well for us. It's more so just the time of putting them into, but it's just growing, but not just growing for the sake of it. Just to say we're now doing 10 times more than we were. It's all got to make sense. I think so many people just grow and grow and grow. And then it's unsustainable. Mm-hmm. Once you get to that, it needs to make sense. And we're very cognizant of every major decision that we make. Like it's always a big discussion of this is the pros, this is the cons, and we're not afraid to try stuff, and if it works, great. If it fails, we do it publicly, and we'll probably laugh about it on a show. So there's always that transparency.
So so laugh a lot, the 5th anniversary show coming up Saturday of a Full Gear weekend, Saturday the 19th, if I remember right, and 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 to 4:30, I think the schedule is. And what
are you gonna make it, Josh?
Oh, yeah, I'm there. Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Josh will be there live and in living color.
Absolutely. When did you decide that you wanted to do a show like this? And was it just the timing with Full Gear and everything just kind of came to be the perfect time?
So a good friend of ours by the name of Robert Pearson, he runs this production company called Real Digital. And he reached out to us and suggested the idea that he wanted, you know, for the experience of his company, and they were going to put a budget together. They wanted to run a show, and he had some suggestions of running a show in October and then maybe another one in December. And we came up with, we said, let's, because October was pretty quick. This was around, I want to say like September, that this was coming our way. Said, let's do November. That gives us enough time to promote this. We can promote it around our 5th anniversary, and let's do Full Gear weekend. Like if location is, doesn't matter, let's do it in Newark around an AEW pay-per-view. So we went from there, and this is kind of just a test to see like what the appetite is to do. We haven't done a live show since the summer of 2019 when SummerSlam was here in Toronto, and we had done a few, you know, at WrestleManias. So this is one where it's not attached to WrestleMania or a Toronto event. So we're venturing out to attempt this on November 19th. But that's how it came about. Like it was pretty much presented to us. There was pretty much no risk involved for us. And it's, you know, we're involved in the planning and obviously doing the show, but a lot of the logistics have been covered for us, which has been a tremendous godsend to have.
Gotcha. So it'll be, there'll be musical numbers, skits, I'm sure. Anything wacky like that? Like a full Broadway production? Is that what we're expecting? Off Broadway?
Well, we're gonna have. There's a listener in his band has volunteered their time, so we will have an in-house post wrestling band before the show begins. So some ambient music as those are finding their seats. Brayden Harrington and Davey Portman, who do the Up Next show, they're going to be doing an interactive trivia game as the warm up, and then Way and I will do about a 1 hour Q&A. And we're going to go through like the origin story of post wrestling. Well, we've dug up like our initial email exchanges, going through ideas, how we came up with the name. So those were pretty, I just don't delete emails. So I'm the opposite of Hillary Clinton, and I've got all the emails and I will produce them on November 19th. So yeah, it'll be a Q&A. And for those who get the VIP tickets, we'll be doing a meet and greet right after the show. You can hang out with all of us. And you also get an event t-shirt that Robert Pearson designed. So Josh will be there. The part I'm looking forward to the most, it's the largest like gathering of people associated with the site. Like WH Park will be there, Chris from LA, Mike Murray, just Andrew Thompson, who I've never met Andrew. So I'll get to meet him at this. So I'm looking forward to that, and all of the listeners. These are all the past shows that we've done. They've always been a lot of fun to do. So yeah, it's Saturday, November 19th, and the tickets are postwrestling.com/live.
Yep, and that'll be plenty of time to get to full gear. It's close by, and should be a lot of fun. Last question. AEW came to Toronto for the first time recently. I know you and the crew went. How was your AEW experience?
I thought that it was the first night was excellent. I thought that Dynamite, like it was like an hour of Elevation tapings and then 2 hours of Dynamite. And by the time those 2 hours were done, I was like, I'm totally satisfied. I had gone to the Buffalo show about a month before. This was right after All Out.
Yep.
And that was, it was a very weird show. It's right after All Out. It felt like this cloud over top of it. Like it had this very dire feel to it. And man, did like you feel it during Rampage and the tapings. I like the fact they separated them, but I heard a lot of complaints from people the next night about Rampage, and just, you know, they really didn't announce a whole lot in advance. And you got like 2 hours of dark tapings followed by Rampage on the second night. Overall, if you look at it, and there was certainly a drop off in attendance from night one to night two. If you still look at it, it was still a very like healthy number for AEW, especially now given some of where they're drawing. But overall, I think it was a successful start in the market. You can argue if it's like two nights versus one, but there's certainly a ton of savings as well in running the building two nights in the same city as opposed to just one mammoth taping on the Wednesday night. I do kind of like Rampage being separate, as that show, I think, continues to kind of find its like being a destination. And that goes back to our prior discussion about, you know, time that people have and where Rampage fits in that schedule.
Yeah. I did AEW Boston last night, and yeah, it's 7 o'clock, basically 7 to 11:15. And then I had to do my write up afterwards. So I did that right there at the venue. That's a long night. I go home at 1:30, about an hour, 50 minutes. It's a long night. You can just feel that fatigue during the Rampage taping, like, especially if it's not big names or stars. Like, I was there the night they had, it was the Moxley Wheeler Yuta match. That was, everyone was up for that whole show. Mm-hmm. You know, that was April. Fast forward to November. I mean, it's, you know, Orange Cassidy and Lee Johnson. It was Bandito and Roosh, which was kind of cool to see. And it was, you know, Brian Cage and Dante Martin. So that, it was just a different feel, but you can feel that, like, just kind of like, okay, can we just, and you see a few more people kind of trickle out here and there. But a lot, you know, most people stayed, but that energy, it's hard to maintain that through a, you know, 3 hour show.
And you've covered pay-per-views in the past, correct?
I haven't. No,
this haven't. Okay.
Full Gear is actually going to be my first AEW pay-per-view, obviously. And this will be my first pay-per-view I've attended since, like, it might have been WWE Backlash in Manchester, New Hampshire, like a long, long time ago. It has been a long time since I've been on pay-per-view. I've done UFC pay-per-views before, plenty of those. But yeah, this would be my first wrestling pay-per-view in like a long, long time.
Well, there you go. We'll both be at Full Gear, which I guess means we'll both be at the press conference afterwards. See what the follow-up is.
That's right. And Tony Khan will have grill marks on his face by the time we're both done with him. I'll tell you that much right now.
Well, I mean, if they put the elite out there, I mean, I don't know what other questions you could possibly ask them and how they navigate this. If their strategy is, we're not going to talk about all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want to talk about only the future. I don't know how well that will go over.
We're coming, Tony Khan. We're coming for you. I'm excited to see you. We'll see you coming up this weekend. But obviously, people can go to Post Wrestling right now and check out all the news and all that. You can become a Patreon subscriber. There's a link right there as well. A bunch of different levels, I believe 4 different levels of different financial varieties and all types of stuff there. Catch you on YouTube. Anything else to plug, John? We had the 5th anniversary show.
You nailed it all. Yeah. Postwrestling.com/live. That's the link for the 5-year anniversary show. General and VIP tickets available now. And come see Josh Nason in person.
Live in person. That's right. Autographs, 8x10s, the whole thing. We're looking forward to it.
Everything you want.
Well, John, congratulations to you and Wei and the rest of the staff on 5 years. Looking forward to talking to you before then for the next 5 years. But good stuff. A lot of small businesses don't survive, and doing so well. So far, so well, and doing some good stuff. And looking forward to seeing the big celebration coming up on Saturday. John Pollock, thanks so much. 4-timer club.
4-timers. Where's the jacket?
All right. Big thanks to John for rejoining. And we recorded that interview a week ago from where you're listening to this right now, actually last Thursday. So if we talk about, you know, AEW, me heading to AEW and all those things like that, that was in reference to Boston, as you might imagine. However, I will be heading down to AEW this very weekend. That's right. Newark, New Jersey. Josh Nason will be there. I will be at the live show on Saturday, and that should be fun for the post-wrestling show. I'm also going to be at Rampage on Friday night, and I'm also going to be, obviously, at the big show Full Gear on Sunday. I hope not on Sunday. There's going to be no show there. So it'll be good. This is I think, as I mentioned at a couple days ago, if you listen to the Best of Series January, the kickoff, this is my first pay-per-view since 2005 of any kind. So pretty cheap trip down there. So I'm heading down there, taking advantage, looking forward to meeting some people. And if you're going to be around, say hi. If you're going to be at the post-wrestling show, say hi. And hopefully, it should be a good contingent of Wrestling Observer subscribers. No Dave, no Brian, no nothing like that. I don't even think Andrew Zarin's going to be there. But I'll be there, damn it. I'll be there representing. So, yeah, let me know if you're going to be in the area. And, it should be a fun weekend. And, and so coming up this week on Friday, the second installment of the Best of 2022 Pro Wrestling Series begins with February. And then we'll have next week 2 shows. We'll do March and April, unless something batshit crazy happens at Full Gear. And then, we'll have to maybe do some changes there. But the plan is 2 shows next week, and then pretty much 2 shows here per week for the rest of the year. We still have the Best in MMA series. That's going to kick off in December. So there's 4 episodes there. But yeah, the plan is to do basically 2 shows a week for the rest of the year, and then take a little sojourn for a couple weeks or so, and then reload and get back at it. But these are fun shows to do, these recap shows, and so much shit and stuff that happens, and it's awesome to take a look back. I love doing that stuff, so it's good stuff, and all the good personalities to talk to, some good ones coming up as well. So big thanks to John Pollock. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I will talk to you on Friday with the Best of 2022. We'll look back the year that was pro wrestling, February edition. Until that time, and until next time, insert catchphrase here.